There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along on this Friday. Lots to do on today's show. And the text line, phone line, hotline, 343-0106. It's ready to go out there. And we'll be joined here in just a second with Representative Chip Brown. But before that, news breaking this morning here on a change on the vaccines, eligibility for COVID-19 vaccines. And Dalton mentioned, we saw it came out, said media, you're eligible. Although I know there are members of the media that have been getting their vaccines early. Not going to call them out by name, but just a thing that's out there. It says from a story over Yellowhammer, additional categories of Alabamians will be eligible to receive COVID-19 vaccine beginning March 22nd, according to ADPH, an announcement for today. Every citizen over age 55 will be eligible. So everybody 55, no matter what, will be eligible, as will people with a number of underlying health conditions to make them more vulnerable to the virus. The categories, professions, well, let's do that first. Professions granted eligibility, transportation and logistics, waste and wastewater, food service, including restaurant staff, shelter and housing, that means construction folks, finance, so bank tellers will be up for this as of the 22nd, information technology and communication, energy, legal, media, and public safety, engineers, okay? The other part of this, and I'm going to link this up on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5, ADPH also provided a list of medical conditions that will make individuals eligible for vaccine. All right, let me go ahead and give you my prediction for next week, that there will be many segments of this show and the morning show, Jeff's show, and all that, where the discussion will come up about this. Here we go. These are the medical conditions that let you jump in line. People with intellectual or developmental disabilities. I don't think you're going to get issue there. Cancer. I don't think you have an issue there. Chronic kidney disease. You won't have an issue there. COPD. I think that people won't push back. Heart conditions. Okay. Such as heart failure. They list them all. It'll be on there. Solid organ transplant. I don't think people will be bothered by that one. Pregnancy, people won't be bothered by that one. Sickle cell disease, people won't be bothered by that one. Type 1 and 2 diabetes are on there. I don't think anybody's going to have a problem. Then there's these two. Smoking and being fat. Well, they said obesity, BMI greater than 30. Now, who is going to, first of all, and I know the discussion of the science behind this, that there is some science behind this, but who's going to know exactly what their BMI greater than 30? That they're going to figure that one out. So I mean, are you 29 or 31% BMI? I mean, that they're going to do that. That's on the list, and smoking. So if you want to get the vaccine and you're not a smoker, you just pick up a pack of whatever people smoke, Marlboros, and walk up there and get the vaccine. Okay, we'll have time to discuss this in the future, and it would be. I mean, it would be unfair for me to just ask Representative Chip Brown what he thinks about this without any time to read through it. Hey, Representative, what do you think about this?
I haven't read through it, Sean. So
smart move.
I don't know. That's the first I've heard of it. So.
It is. Yeah, me too. The two there, I mean, I completely get the science behind. I completely get the science behind the BMI thing and the smoking. They say those are comorbidities. But in a PR sense, that's a challenge to go in and say it has to be a BMI of 30 or greater. I mean, you're heavy. Do you know you're fat? Do you know what your BMI number is?
No, I don't know, but I would imagine mine's pretty high.
Are they going to, like, get a caliper on your gut and check you when you go in there?
Well, and even the smoking thing, really, I mean, how are you going to determine, you know, somebody could say, well, I'm a smoker and go get the shot. I mean, I don't know. Those are odd ones to put on there. I agree with you. That doesn't, you know, I mean, the other ones totally make sense to me.
But right,
those two,
right.
I don't know how you actually, you just, I guess you have to take people's word at it.
I mean, you're kind of setting up for, I just know this is going to be discussion next week on the radio station. It's coming out on a Friday, all right? It'll cipher over the weekend, or it'll sit there and cook down over the weekend in the slow cooker, and then it'll come up on Monday. People will be talking about the fact that you got to figure out what your BMI is. If you're 29, you're not getting the shot. If you're 30 or greater, you're getting it. And, yeah, who's not going to walk up? Oh, yeah, smoker. I'm smoking. Oh, you should have seen me smoking on the way here. Just smoking, smoking, smoking. So, I don't know. All right. It's just, that was brand new news. The story is linked up on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5. And birthday girl, Leanna, I see her walking back in through the lobby. Leanna can grab that. We can put that on the Facebook page as well. All right, Representative, a lot to talk about. Another week in Montgomery. And is next week the week off now in the cycle? How's that work?
No, we're at work next week. And then we take a week off, which we do every year. And it was, matter of fact, this was right in the COVID window last year where the session stopped because of COVID. So the thought this year is that they'll reassess where we are, which we're actually in a good place as far as COVID is concerned. We're working at full capacity, and, you know, but we know next week's a big week. There'll be several big bills coming up, and we'll be at it Tuesday morning.
All right, before we get to the big bills, although this is big for people, do we have, because I think we were talking about what they're doing in Florida, time to time we have these daylight saving time pushes here to stay on that in Montgomery. Is there a bill floating around the House like that right now? Is there anything you've heard of?
Well, I know.
In the past we have. Yeah.
Yeah, I think 2 years ago we passed a bill that would set us up if they do that on the federal level. So,
but we're not stepping out. We're not stepping out as a state. We're just saying if the feds change it, we're going with it.
Not that I'm aware of, but I wish we would, because,
yep.
You know, I think the purpose of daylight savings time years ago made sense. I mean, you know, it was for farming and factory workers, but I don't know. I think we've outlived the purpose of it, and it just, you know, it messes you up. You get home late in the winter. It's dark when you get home. In the summer, it's dark when you leave. And, you know, I don't know. I don't like it.
Good, good. I just wanted to get you on the record on that. All right. now things nowhere near as contentious as that. Let's talk gaming. You know, you and I had the last conversation we had. You said, I'm waiting to see what comes out of the Senate. Well, it came off the tracks this week over in the Senate, and what are you hearing in the House? Are y'all going to have, I mean, are they saying just hold on, or they're saying, well, forget about that?
Well, I think there's a couple of schools of thought. There's the one school of thought that will, a version of that will reemerge, and then, you know, then you had two lottery bills filed in the Senate. Well, you had one lottery bill, I'm sorry, one lottery bill filed in the Senate. And Senator McClendon filed a bill, and then Senator Grudger is handling it. That's the approach that I prefer, and I think most of my colleagues prefer, is to separate the two issues and, you know, bring a lottery bill, let the people vote on the lottery bill, and then, you know, bring a casino bill and a gaming bill and let the people vote on that. So I'm hopeful for some movement on the lottery bill side of things.
But we're told,
we were very,
okay,
close to passing that 2 years ago.
Right, but we're told, you know, by those voices coming out of Montgomery that it will not pass. You will not pass a single lottery bill because of the special interest there, that they don't want this to happen because, you know, it seems like it doesn't matter what the people of Alabama want. It seems like everybody in Montgomery in a decision-making mode is saying, well, it's not going to happen because it doesn't benefit Legacy Dog Tracks or the PCI.
Well, I don't know. I think that the failure of the bill last week shows that maybe that approach isn't the way to do it. I think when you go back and you look, those approaches have never even really come close when you've done one that's try to put the whole thing in one package. And that's not the way most states do it. Historically, most states have, you know, passed gaming and then passed a lottery, or passed a lottery and then passed gaming. And I think they're two separate issues. So that's what I prefer, is to have them separated like that. So I'm hopeful that there'll be some movement on the lottery. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball to look what's going on in the Senate, but, you know, I do know that there's support to do it that way. So.
All right, let's do this. We're coming right back, more of our conversation with State Rep Chip Brown. Going to talk a little more gaming and clean lotto bills and all that. But then the question we asked earlier about the slam dunk bill to let the legislature call itself back into session, right? Even though I got questions about it. I mean, it seemed like that was something they were going to get done. It didn't make it out of committee last week. What happened this week? We'll talk about that when we return.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, streaming online, fmtalk1065.com. Catch us there. Several apps, TuneIn Radio app, a bunch of others out there, and you can go back and check the podcast when it suits you. Podcast all piled up over at fmtalk1065.com, or you can, not piled up, but I mean, get them a la carte there, or you can go grab them when you subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. Any of those platforms have it. All right, continue our conversation with Representative Chip Brown, District 105, and talking about another week in Montgomery. All right, so gaming, I know you're supporting the lotto bill. It's just, that's what I think. I actually would support all entities, casino gaming, the sports, and the lotto. I think they all should. It's not anti. When I say that I think they should be in separate bills, it's not anti casino gaming. I just think Alabamians get to express themselves more clearly on that. Is there a possibility of passing an amendment to change the Constitution and then saying, okay, this applies to all gambling based on another vote? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's here's lotto, and then we'll come back for another vote for casino, another one for sports betting.
I don't believe so. I think you'd have to go back and because, you know, when you change a constitutional amendment, when you amend the amendment, you have to go back with another amendment.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that you would have to go back with a separate amendment on each issue.
Okay. But if you pass something that was clean lotto, though, what would that look like? What would the amendment to the Constitution be? Because that's gambling, right? Would it say gambling specifically and only lotto, or what would that look like?
Yeah, it would say, because I actually, the bill from 2 years ago that was a constitutional amendment that we were just one vote short in the House, it passed the Senate, then we were one vote short in the House, and there's a lot of issue to that, but that one says, it spells it out, you know, paper lotto tickets or electronically generated tickets, allows you to participate in nationwide games, which would be Powerball and Mega Millions and any other games, but then it also allows you to do scratch offs and that sort of thing, and retail points of sale. And
but so that's all in the, but that's in the, like, you'd have two parts. You still have to have an amendment to the Constitution, and then you have a supporting bill for lotto, says, or is that it?
Yeah,
all
what
in
you,
one?
What you do on a bill like that, you would have what's called the enabling legislation, and that's one bill, and that is what would be on the ballot. That would be the question, you know, when it's spelled out on the ballot and it says vote yes or no, then that is one piece of legislation, and the second part of the legislation would be the actual bill, what the bill does and how it reads and that sort of thing.
But I wonder,
so
what happens,
like a, just like a, you know, I have a NIAS law,
mm-hmm,
that should be in the Senate Judiciary hopefully this week. That's two bills. That's House Bill 130 and House Bill 131, but they both have to pass to get it on the ballot.
All right. We've got a few minutes left here. I want to ask you a couple other things. We talked about Anaya's Law. Also, this fortified homes bill you've talked about in the past, where is that right now?
That is waiting to come to the floor in the Senate. It passed the Senate Banking and Insurance Committee last week, and just, you know, waiting its turn to come up on the floor. And I feel good about that on the floor. It's got a lot of support. The insurance commissioner is behind it and very supportive, and that's always helpful. And so I think we'll get that done. I feel really good about it. Senator Jack Williams from North Mobile County is handling that in the Senate. We also, you know, this past week we passed out of the Senate House Bill 136, which is my bill that renames names the Dolphin Island Sea Lab as the official aquarium and marine research center for Alabama. And that's really more than just a naming it. What that does, that allows the Dolphin Island Sea Lab to take advantage of a lot of federal grants and research grants, because they are the official aquarium of Alabama and research center. And then also from a tourism standpoint, allows them to do marketing and, you know, Southern Living and that sort of thing. We're really one of the only states that doesn't have an official aquarium. South Carolina, Georgia, wherever they have official state aquariums.
And we have a heck of a facility there. If y'all have not gone and taken, I'd say the kids, but take everybody to go see the fish with the estuarium, or whatever the actual term for the hands-on.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know,
it's awesome.
They actually do a trip down Alabama of all the rivers to where it empties out into the Gulf of Mexico, and the type of species that are there, and they're presented there and on display. And then, you know, the facility there also serves 23 colleges in Alabama with sending their students to do marine biology and marine research. And then they're really one of the global leaders on as far as being experts on marine science in the Gulf and in Mobile Bay. So, I mean, it's truly a gem. I mean, we're lucky to have it, and yep. I'm very fortunate that it's in my district.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up, we talked about this last year or last week. The bill, and I don't even have the House bill number in front of me, the bill to let y'all call yourselves back into session.
Right.
Where does that, I mean, I was surprised last week that got stuck in committee.
Yeah, I was too. There was another bill identical to that filed by Becky Nordgren, who had filed the original bill. She just went and refiled it again. And so I think it's just working its way through the process. And I expect that to eventually come to the floor. I hope it does. I'm a co-sponsor on the original one and a co-sponsor on this one. It's just one of those things. Plane flying over. It's one of those things that, unfortunately, in the legislature, sometimes good bills get hung up, you know. One thing, Sean, I was going to mention to you, too. This week, I filed House Bill 511, which will allow seafood producers and commercial fishing community, to take advantage of the same tax credits that the farmers do. So I think that's for Mobile County and Baldwin County, that's a big bill that will allow them to, in the farming industry, and rightfully so, they're allowed to take certain tax credits on equipment and, you know, food and that sort of thing that they buy, and this allow the seafood industry to do the same thing, because they actually suffer from the same. They are farming. They're just farming and did seafood farming, and they suffer from the same ups and downs of commodities and foreign imports flooding the markets, and so they should be able to take advantage of those same tax credits.
So, and they'll apply through the farm bill, or how?
No, it's a separate bill. In Alabama, the farmers, and it's been like this as far as I know, from 1901, there's certain things that farmers are able to take tax credits on. It's at the tail end. You pay for it, and then you get a credit back. But, on equipment and that sort of thing, and this would apply the same standards to the seafood industry and processing, so that they'd be able to. And what that does, that allows, it helps us with competition, will allow us to,
our seafood industry to get tax credits and be more competitive and to help fight off foreign imports as well.
Very good. We will we'll talk more, get an update on that coming up next week. So you'll have next week in, and then the spring break week is the week after that.
Right. And we're back hard at it.
Very good. Representative, we appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming on the show, and we'll check back soon.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Hey, you too. Representative Chip Brown, District 105. Coming back, it's the yearly discussion between the other end of the state and a Senator Arthur Orr. We talk his ABC bill next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 online, fmtalk1065.com. Stream us there. Tune in radio app. A lot of other platforms out there, but keep us handy on the stream as well. All right, it is, as I said before we went to the news, it's a yearly meetup between a senator from, well, about the opposite end of the state from down here in southwest Alabama. But we line up on a lot of things, and this is one that we talk about year after year as he files bills to deal with the retail portion of the Alabama liquor sales, ABC stores. We're joined by State Senator Arthur Orr, District 3, to talk more about this. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, good to be with you, Sean. And, you know, and I wish we didn't have this date because that would hopefully mean that we are well on the way, as most every other state in the country. We are exiting the retail sales of alcohol here in the state of Alabama.
It is a, you know, where I'm coming from on this is it's not even a question about alcohol. I'm a person who buys alcohol, will continue to buy alcohol, whether the state's in the business or not. But it's the question of the state being in a retail business. If this was hamburgers or, you know, gasoline or anything, people would go nuts about this.
That's correct. You know, if we were designing state government today, would we choose to get into the retail space of things like alcohol or hamburgers or selling cars or whatever? And what makes Alabama different is that if we were 100% control state, and by that I mean we only had state stores as our kind of outlets for sale or retail outlets, then I might understand the argument a little bit, because we are afraid of the wrong people getting it or seedy groups getting into selling it. But we've got over 700 private retailers out there today trying to make a go of it, and the state is competing head-to-head with them all across the state.
It is. People will see that and go, well, there's the ABC store. You need to go elsewhere and see that this is, right, not the deal where you have this hybrid of private liquor stores and the state being in it. And give people an idea, too, how this sets up. So the function of the ABC is, I mean, multifaceted. They do control, right, liquor coming in and charge. They charge the excise tax, right, that is going to be paid even if I buy at a private location. Is that correct?
That's correct. There's a markup and then a tax that goes on the alcohol. What's interesting, though, that kind of creates the unlevel playing field out in the marketplace is that your state stores, and there are about 180 of those across the state, 170, 180, they do not have to pay city or county or any local taxes. They do pay the 4% tax, but that instantly puts the private retailer at a disadvantage, a cost disadvantage, when they have to pay all the other taxes that the state doesn't have to.
I mean, honestly, goodness, if you took this, if it was anything other than alcohol, the outrage would have been heard decades ago. But I guess people just got into a habit with this. This is your state having a competitive advantage in a marketplace over the private sector. Senator Orr, I mean, if we're going to be business friendly and business minded Republicans in the state of Alabama, this is not that. This is not that. This doesn't fit that definition.
That's correct. You know, we'll just continue to profit at the expense of the private sector. And we've had the numbers run. And if a couple things, Sean, if you assume that Alabamians will purchase and consume the same level or amount of alcohol if we went 100% to private retailers, then the savings to the state are in the neighborhood of $8 to $12 million each and every year, so in perpetuity. So you could say over 10 years we'd save $80 to $120 million that we wouldn't be spending otherwise on the operations. And that's salaries, that's leases, that's the system that they have in place.
But we're told, Senator, that they are a state agency that makes money. That's what's been thrown at me before. That ABC.
That's correct. Yeah. Oh yeah, at the committee hearing where the bill got out of committee, you know, they throw up big numbers on the board and say, "Well, we won't be able to support the state at these levels because we won't be able to. We're not selling the alcohol." Well, what they don't tell you is that that same marked up bottle of gin and taxed bottle of gin, those same dollars sold by a same bottle sold by a private retailer, the taxes would then still go to the same state agencies out there across state government, DHR, mental health, et cetera. I mean, yes, factually true that it wouldn't come directly from the ABC retail sales. No, now the money would be coming from the private retail sales of alcohol, but still, it's still the same dollars being taxed on the same bottles of alcohol. It's just a different person there at the cash register. The dollars, again, assuming consumption or purchases, I should say, are the same at the same level, the money will be the same to these state agencies.
Yeah, it's good for people to hear that because they'll hear the arguments against this. So once again, y'all, the revenue, that argument that's made that you can't close us down, this is revenue to the state, you're not taking the ABC out of their ability to charge the excise taxes on it coming in. It's just they do that, and they don't open a store. They let the private sector do that.
You know, another one of the boogeymen that they use, Sean, is that it's going to increase drinking.
Yes, I've heard this.
You know, so underage sales, those kind of things. So they're still in the enforcement business, but I've got studies that show that when states have privatized the retail side, that it has not led to an increase in underage drinking or sales. So let me share a little vignette with you that I got via email a few years ago. And if I recall correctly, it was actually there in the Mobile area that this came from. And it was a guy saying, "You know, I appreciate what you're trying to do because I used to work for the ABC, you know, store down here in Mobile area. And, you know, you'd find it curious, but every Friday afternoon and evening, a lot of those, quote, broken bottles, end quote, would wind up in the trunks of the employees there at my location where I worked." So you don't have the owner-operator mentality, and that's not to malign those working there at the retail sales area, but of ABC, but you don't have the owner-operator mentality like you do with the mom-and-pop private retailer, which is pretty much what we have all across the state at the 700-plus locations.
Yeah, and what we're talking about, number one, is ABC, like Senator said, would still be enforcing, you know, drinking laws in the state. But I'll tell you this, I'm 48, and I bought Dad a bottle of Macallan Scotch for his birthday the other day, beginning of this month. I got carded at the private retailer. I'm 48. I mean, people aren't just walking in. They're not going to risk their license and willy-nilly sell. I mean, they have a motivation to sell more. They also have a motivation to keep their license.
Let me tell you this, though, Sean, and you'll find this interesting. One of the things that ABC says is, well, we've never had a charge of selling to underage drinkers or minors or something in our stores. Well, what they don't tell you is they don't even check their own stores. They're a division of state government, so they don't go in and send the 15-year-old or 16-year-old or 17-year-old or 18-year-old in to try to purchase the bottle of vodka and catch the cashier to selling it to them. They don't do that to themselves. Just the private guys.
Really? So the sting? So they don't sting their own stores?
That is what I am told by well-placed sources.
Wow. So many questions coming in on the text line. Terry says, wouldn't there be more revenue if you did away with the cost of ABC stores and employee salaries plus all the benefits?
The answer is yes, and that's where you get that $8 to $12 million plus the leases. And here's the opposition, Sean, when we do our yearly yearly attempt. Number one is the State Employees Association, 600-plus jobs. That is understandable. You know, they're concerned about their employment. We figured it up several years ago. Benefits and salary, it's about $45,000 average across that spectrum of those stockers and cashiers, et cetera, and those that work in the retail side. The next kind of opponent, and these are the ones that hire the lobbyists that work against the bill, is the landlords. They're the ones that are making excellent profits on these leases, and are well placed. You find in the communities around the state who get these leases for the retail locations, and they're the ones that invest in the lobbying effort. And then thirdly, you get the crowd that is concerned about an increase in consumption, liquor store on every corner, selling to minors. We've talked about the minors and the studies. As far as liquor stores on every corner, that's all up to the local municipality or county that is regulating the sales as far as the zoning laws, whether they're going to allow a liquor store to locate at this intersection or not. That's really not a issue, and they can do that today as a private, you know, somebody want to come in privately and put up a store. Cities regulate how many stores they want in their local area.
It's, you know, Senator, the part about the landlord thing, you know, I've asked you this in the past. I think it was first came to light, gosh, 8, 10, maybe 12 years ago when I saw the number of properties the state of Alabama owned, right, through whatever situation they received the property, through taxes, you know, to pay back or whatever. And I think I said something like, well, why wouldn't you put an ABC store in a place that the state already owns? You can't do that, can you?
Not to my knowledge.
You have to rent from a retailer. What I'm getting at is there's a motivation
they
here.
They do not want to be in the owning business of all these retail outlets. Now, I've also tell you that several years ago we crunched the numbers and got the information, and that about 20%, my recollection, of the retail stores lose money each and every year, which means, you know, the taxpayers of the state are subsidizing
liquor sales.
The sales of alcohol in certain areas to make this available. And I go back to my fundamental question, is this truly a function of state government to make sure that we have alcohol available to our citizens in certain pockets of the state where it's not profitable to operate a store?
Yeah, they're worried about how you get broadband expansion into areas. Just ask ABC. They can go in and put stores in places that don't make money. Jason asked here, where did the money come from for the many recent renovations and changes to select stores, and where did that come from? Who approves that?
That would be all done under the ABC board. You know, they're the ones that supervise the operations. And what's interesting, again, the groups that talk about, oh, we don't want more drinking and alcohol consumption. I saw just this last week, you know, ABC had introduced an app to help its customers. So in a business sense, I tip my hat to them, you know, for trying to increase sales, trying to improve their displays and doing all things that a retailer would and should do to try to increase sales. But by the same token,
it's a state agency.
In the face of these people claiming that if we fully privatize, it will increase the number, the level of drinking in the state.
So many people sitting here nodding along with you, and the conversation you and I have year after year after year beyond the state employees union and the people that are in the retail business in the renting business for these properties. Why can't you get other members of the Senate and members of the House and a majority on board with doing this? I mean, it seems like there'd be enough people out there.
Here's what I've, and I'll be candid with you. So we sent the bill to a different committee this year. And as I went to some committee members and discussed it, and these are new members in the Senate, and I didn't know where they fell on the issue, almost to a person, Sean, they were not supportive of the bill. And I was absolutely flabbergasted. I thought, you are a less government, low taxes Republican, and at least I assume that that's how you ran. But here, you can't even support this initial effort, which polls 70%+ to get out of the retail sales. And they are struggling with even supporting the bill to vote for it in committee. So I say all that to say this. I've got a lot of maxims that I've learned in government. And one of them is this: the money always wins unless the people are screaming. So you've got lobbyists lobbying against the legislation, and unless the people are screaming, saying, we want this, this is crazy, I expect you, senator, representative, to vote to privatize and do something about it, then you know who's going to win.
So let's talk about this before we wrap up. So what is the step when somebody's listening to you and said, yeah, well, I want to be screaming about this? When they talk to their representative, their senator, what bill is it? What's the number? What are they going to call about?
Oh, Sean, I don't have the bill number off the top of my head, but I can tell you it would certainly be beneficial if your people in the Mobile and your listening area would get in touch with their senators directly and via email, phone, however, and tell them they support the retail privatization bill for ABC. And that would be most helpful to help this effort and to get us going on the Senate floor.
And then we can have next year, we'll be talking about something. By the way, SB 287, they can support this. This passes, and then you can join me each year to talk about something else.
That'd be a great day.
All right, Senator, we appreciate your time. Thanks for being on with us. And maybe we'll be talking about how this passes instead of how it didn't pass next time.
Thank you. All right. A good weekend.
Hey, you too. State Senator Arthur Orr joining us. And we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
A big thank you to Senator Orr, and we'll get some of these texts, a lot of questions about this, but it's a bill that comes up every year. This year it's SB 287 on privatizing, just all private liquor sales, getting the state out of the retail portion. All right, I want you all to say hi to my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM, getting ready to go into a good-looking weekend weather-wise with Dr. Bill. Maybe you get a chance to come out and check out inventory. Larry, how's it looking?
That's great. We are going to have a great weather weekend, so the sun's going to be shining all weekend. We've got a lot full of cars, trucks, and SUVs.
Now, you talk about that. On the SUVs, you said the other day, if people are looking for the big SUVs or the mid-size, you got a selection of those.
As we talked Monday a week ago, this past Monday, we had 7 Suburbans. As of today, I got 1.
Okay. So you need some more.
Need some more.
How do you
trade for some?
Okay, you will trade for some. And I know y'all look, get great stuff from right here locally, but y'all look around the country or around the Southeast for the cream of the crop.
Absolutely. We do that daily. Matter of fact, I've been on the computer most of the morning looking for a couple vehicles for some longtime customers and trying to find them exactly what they want.
All right. People want to come check out that inventory, talk with y'all. How do they find you?
Come see us at Highway 90 and Plantation Road. Visit us online at lcmmotorcars.com. Like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. All right, some text, and I want to circle back to a story I had at the beginning of the hour. Well, Dave, that's an idea. First of all, Dave says, hey, Sean, remember when we all used to drive to Louisiana to get booze, allegedly? I've heard stories like that, Dave. I don't know that I would participate in that kind of Smokey and the Bandit kind of stuff. He also says, I want a drone supplied with chilled booze vending machine on every block. Too much? Every other block? Maybe we should put this this text here from Don. Maybe we should put the privatized liquor stores and the lottery together and make it one bill and pass them both together. Oh, my gosh. And people talking about the ABC stores having their own app. This isn't anti the people that work in the ABC. They're probably great folks that work in there. It's just a question and a bother I've had for decades that the state's in the business of selling liquor, and it's not anti-liquor. I like liquor. Well, a little bit. I mean, like, you know, some bourbon or something. I like it. It's not anything about the liquor. It's just the state being in the business of it just wears me out. And we continue with this. It just keeps going. Hey, speaking of the state, too. So we put the story up. It's on our social media platforms. Remember, you can follow us at Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Just look for FM Talk 106.5. But this story that just breaking this morning about the next round, March 22nd, they're going to move the eligibility for COVID-19 vaccines down. Anybody 55 years and older can get it. Anyone with a comorbidity can get it. Okay, and they went through, a lot of these are very logical for comorbidities. Cancer, people with developmental disabilities, intellectual disabilities, you want them to have it. Chronic kidney disease, COPD, heart conditions, solid organ transplant, sickle cell disease, type 1 and type 2 diabetes. It makes sense. I want those people to get the vaccine as soon as they can as well. But they listed on here, too. These are the two. I'm telling you right now, this is what we're going to be talking about next week. There are two of what they call the comorbidities here, obesity, and I'm not saying these aren't comorbidities. I'm just saying, think about how this is going to work in the vaccine world. Obesity, if you have a BMI greater than 30. Y'all know if you got Dunlap's disease, right? Because your belly Dunlapped over your belt. But do you know what your BMI is? Who knows? So you have to know if you're BMI 29, you can't get the vaccine, but if you're 30, you can. And smoking. They said smoking as a comorbidity. Well, if you wanted the vaccine, I mean, come on, really? If you wanted it, they say, well, you're under 55. Well, I smoke. How do they get proof you don't? You're like, oh, I smoke all the time. I was smoking on the way here. Do they not think that's going to be an issue on this? Read more of this story and the listing of the professions that also will be granted eligibility over on our social media platforms. Coming right back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. That's next.